Hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Sam Kostler. He is a pedal steel player, utility player, based out of Nashville here.
Wherever you're listening to this podcast, give us a follow. Check it out.
Nice. What you been up to? Touring?
Touring? We've been gone every weekend this whole month.
Nice. Who are you playing with again?
Ella Langley.
Nice.
That's right.
Who is nice. Ella Langley.
Do you want to switch?
No, this is great. Love it.
I'll happily switch with you. Just let me know.
She's a country artist, kind of. I wouldn't say up and comer. She's been around for a bit. She had that song, You Look Like You Love Me. It's like, if you went anywhere last year, you heard it.
If I heard the melody, I'd probably know it.
Yeah, but I'm bad with names. But...
Well, I'm not going to sing it for you.
Well, okay,
but,
that's what I was trying to get at.
Her career just went bonkers, and they have been a three-piece band forever, and they just hired a fourth piece, which is me. So I'm doing utility, which is steel and electric guitar and singing.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's nice. Great. I'm curious, as someone who... I have no experience really playing steel seriously. All of the steel players I know, and I know quite a few, usually don't start out on steel.
Right.
What was the reason for I want to pick up this instrument and go for it?
Sheer arrogance and ignorance at the same time. I grew up playing guitar. Mm. My mom was a violin player. My dad was a guitar player.
Okay.
When I was in my early 20s, I started tinkering around with other instruments, mandolin, banjo, and dobro, anything that had strings on it. I would just buy a cheap one and learn how to make sounds on it. And I would always hear steel guitar, and I just was like, I want to get whatever that thing is, whatever that noise is, I want to make it. Mm-hmm. And I bought one when I was like 21, and it was downhill from there.
How long have you been in Nashville for?
Since February 21, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. You were what, in Austin before that, right?
I was in Austin, Texas, yeah.
How long were you there for?
I was in Austin from 2015 to 2020.
How is the music scene there? Because, I mean, we've been to Austin, but it's only as sort of like passerbys. We've never really been in the music scene there. What is it like?
It's bigger. There's more... like venues, period. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, local, I've noticed that local gigs here are kind of harder to come by because they're, unless you do Broadway or whatever, but they're like, everybody's fighting over local gigs here.
Yeah, there's kind of like the Broadway circuit, and then there's like a bunch of little bars.
There's a bunch of tiny bars. Yeah. It's like almost like an honor. Like, oh, you're playing locally.
Exactly. Yeah.
In Austin, it's like, I could be wrong, but there's so much space, so many venues and so many bars that if you want to play locally, I had an easy time doing that. You don't make very much money. You don't make very much money here either. Yeah. But there's so much, there's a venue everywhere in Austin. So you can book a hour and a half, 2 hour gig.
I think it's anywhere. Also just like
big, and Texas in general.
It's bigger in general. Like Nashville's a pretty small city.
Nashville's
like
a tiny town.
Geographically, it's pretty fucking small.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy Texas. Anytime I get to play out there, I really like it.
I love it.
I mean, Austin's great, but just Texas in general, I think it's fantastic.
It is. It's when I spent my formative years there as like a musician as a contemporary musician, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I love it there.
Why the decision to come out here then?
COVID happened. I was playing with a guy named Pat Green, who's like a Texas country guy.
Okay.
And it was pretty comfortable and playing steel and guitar and singing a little bit, kind of the same thing I do now. But COVID hit, and then like we didn't have any work, and I had that everybody did. Everybody had like the, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah, the what now moment.
I feel like a lot of people moved somewhere during COVID. Like everyone was moving all over.
Well, I had too much time to think about, everything I was doing and wasn't doing. And I was like, well, and at the time, kind of wanted more money. And I was like, I just saw my buddies in Nashville, kind of like, there's just work to go around, tons more here. And also my mom was sick at the time. And Nashville's closer to home. And I was just like, I had, and there was no light at the end of the tunnel as far
Where's
as
home for you? It was like North Carolina.
Yeah. Winston-Salem.
Gotcha.
And so there was, nothing on the calendar with my old band. And I was like, well, if I was ever going to make this jump,
now's the time
to do it. Cause I wouldn't be screwing them. I could let them know ahead of time. And I was like, well, if I shift here and then in Nashville, when the world starts coming back to life, everybody's going to be putting bands together and I'll be untethered and I can hitch on with anybody. And it kind of worked and sort of didn't, but here I am.
Nice. Yeah. Well, it's like everything in life. You know?
You plan on staying here a while or?
I think so. It depends. I like it when it treats me good.
Yeah.
Geographically, it kind of like, I think we've talked about this. It's like not the most desirable place visually and like features wise. Like it's landlocked and weather's just kind of eh. And it like,
yeah,
it's kind of grody.
Could be worse, but
no, yeah. Totally.
It not. Not the best.
Skateboarding is not great here.
Not Southern California.
It's not Southern California. It's not Texas. But
the spots are going away left and right.
Yeah, it's misery.
See, I love
RIP legislative.
What we do? Can I pour some of this out? I love Tennessee. I think Tennessee as a state is stunning. Nashville is a city to me. As much as I enjoy it, and I think it's perfect for this moment in my life, as a city, it's just sort of ass.
It's just yeah. I think a lot of people.
But I'm also just not a city guy in general.
You're from California too.
Yeah, I lived out there through like high school age. So I lived all over growing up, and then went out there, like high school age, and then went out to Boston for college.
I've noticed that people that aren't from the East Coast come to the East Coast. Sorry, I'm leaning closer to this. They come to the East Coast and they're more flabbergasted by it because they're not used to all the mountains and whatever. The visual here, like.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah,
I grew up like 6 hours down I-40, so like the whole like that drive, like the mountains and
it's just what you're accustomed to.
I've seen all this. This Nashville looks like my hometown, just more expensive. So I'm like, fuck this place.
Yeah, I think for me it was almost the opposite. For me, I grew up primarily in the South and on the East Coast. My dad was in the Marine Corps, so I grew up all over, and then went out to California for that time, and I just. Don't get me wrong. I love going out to visit. I love going to see family. And it's a beautiful state, but I just never liked California.
Really?
To me, it just wasn't my thing. So I wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. And never lived in Tennessee before coming out here. But there is something familiar to it. I do think for me, part of the reason I do enjoy living in Nashville is not so much the fact that I live in Nashville, but I like this part of the country. I kind of miss this area, I think. It is a beautiful state.
Well, the only reason I say that is because when I moved out to Texas and I would just go, like any butthole town in Texas, I'm like, this is beautiful. I'm like, look at this wide open landscape and these huge highways. And it's like, I think if you're from there, it's probably pretty depressing. Sure. It's these kind of dusty little towns. Whereas to me, it's so romantic.
Yeah. There's something like charming about a dusty little town.
Yeah. But when you imagine growing up there and being, it's like the Midwest, like first time I saw it, I was like, wow. And then after a little while, you're like, okay. It gets kind of ugly after a while. Boring.
Yeah, grass is always greener.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, we've talked about this on the show before, but Brian and I, neither of us had spent any time in Texas really until a handful of years ago. We did a whole tour out there just going all over Texas, and I think both of us just fell in love with it. I mean, it is awesome. Fantastic.
I really liked I've been there like twice. I really liked it both times I went.
It's amazing.
I think I've heard it's changed dramatically, like, because I've talked to, like, I talked to a bunch of people from all over working at a hotel, and a lot of people who have lived in Austin for a while are saying they're starting to not like it anymore because it's just changed so dramatically.
I'm sure there are people saying that about Nashville too.
Oh, 100%.
Everywhere is kind of doing that. But Texas, Austin has changed. I was there for 5 years, and in the time I was there, I saw it change a little bit. But if you know where to go and who to hang out with, it's still kind of the same place. But yeah, there's definitely people making influencer videos in the streets and stuff. And it's definitely getting this little shimmer that it probably didn't used to have.
Yeah.
And some of the landmarks are going away. And like the old classic whatever. Like some famous club disappears and everybody throws
freaks
a fit.
Out. Yeah.
Same story anywhere.
Yeah. That's not I think it's just sort of natural. It's just, you kind of have to roll with the punches. I mean, it's sad when those things occur, but you just sort of have to roll with the punches. And at the end of the day, I mean, even with Nashville, as much as it has changed, I mean, we only moved here in 2018, so it's not like we've been here forever. But even in that time, it has changed a lot. But it's just sort of inevitable. I think like anything in life, it's all perspective and just how you choose to look at it. I think it seems like overall, it's attracting the right kind of people. And it's attracting people who are out here for a good reason. So, I mean, God knows that's the only reason why we got out here. So,
yeah, it's still relatively inexpensive as far as big cities
as far
go.
As major cities go. Yeah, like the price has gone up a lot here, but like it's gone up a lot everywhere. Like, I think it's just housing in general is kind of gone through the roof.
I'm not a big fan of housing. Maybe I'll get a tent. Yeah, I'll just really try something different.
I'm
for
not
a while.
Far from a tent, honestly. In Madison, it's like I pay $1,000 a month.
Is
dude.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Yeah. Wait. Have you been to my house in Madison? Oh, you have seen my house.
Well, like once. Yeah. I picked you up there once.
It's fine. It's a little attic apartment.
It's a good spot.
Yeah. There you go. Heck yeah. Yeah. The at this point, so I mean, obviously they're out here now, but at this point, I've been in East my whole duration in Nashville. Which is kind of, you know, has its pros and cons, but I, at this point, it almost feels like if I'm not in East, then I'm not like where I've been the last however many years. So,
wait, what do you mean?
Oh, I just mean only because like that's kind of my experience of Nashville. Is living in that area. You know what I mean? So it's like if I move to Germantown, I'm still in Nashville, but it's sort of a different day to day than what it would be the last, you know, however many years. So,
yeah.
He kind of,
I like East too. It kind of got too expensive over there though.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Especially for how ugly
I think I'm
is.
The only person, I think I'm the only person in East who's had their rent knocked down in the last couple of years. So that's nice.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Which is the only reason I'm probably still there right now. But
yeah.
Yeah. It's, again, not Nashville's, it is what it is. There's good and bad with it.
But yeah, for sure.
What, I assume you started on guitar.
Uh huh.
When you first started playing music in general, was the goal, it sounds like a strange question, but I'm always curious what the goal was as a young person with picking up that first instrument. Is it to play songs? Is it to just be able to, is it to be able to write your own material? Like why bother picking up a guitar in the first place?
Well, I kind of didn't. My dad is a classical, my family are classical musicians. They're all.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So my mom was a classical violin player. And played in symphony her whole life, and my dad is a classical guitar player, played his whole life, and teaches and performs.
That's
and my
amazing.
Brothers are gnarly classical guitarists. They still play and tour the world, and they're incredible.
Yeah, I think I followed your brother on Instagram because he posted him on there one time.
Mm-hmm. He's nuts.
He's super good.
Yeah, that's and amazing. Weirdly, my little brother's like the best guitar player in the family.
Oh, wow.
He's insane, but he's, anyway.
Wait, so how many siblings do you have?
I'm the middle child.
Okay.
So my dad was hired in the 80s to go help write the Suzuki method for guitar. You know what Suzuki method is? So that's where I was born in Japan because in 1986, we were over there, or my parents were, and I was born over there. And so my brothers and I are weirdly like the Suzuki guitar guinea pigs in a weird way. So I didn't like see the guitar and go, I want to do that. It was just like literally a chore. Growing up.
Interesting.
So like I had to come home from school and like my dad would be like, did you clean your room? Did you do your homework? Did you practice? So I had to go through my black book of like Suzuki material and
like what age were you when you were
I don't even remember not playing guitar.
Okay. Wow.
That's why I'm left-handed. Mm-hmm. I do everything left-handed except for play guitar right-handed because my dad stuck a guitar in my lap before I even knew what handed I was. Mm-hmm. So I was just having this conversation about how like I don't know if I actually like doing any of this at all because it's been, I'm just like, I became a cognizant adult and was like, oh yeah, I can play guitar. Like I never chose, I never saw it and was like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. I just like was 16 and all my friends were picking up guitar for the first time. And I was like, oh, I can do that. Like you don't know how to play guitar? You don't have to do that in your house? And I was like, oh yeah, I know this. And they're like, whoa, you play guitar? I'm like, yeah, this is stupid. What do you guys? So
I feel like, I sometimes wish that I started at that young of an age because I feel like there's a huge benefit to just like always kind of having it in your hands from the beginning. You know, I kind of got started late. I probably didn't start really playing until like maybe 15 or something, which I guess isn't that late. But sometimes I wish I started super young.
I'm in the bubble, so I don't know.
Yeah,
but I can tell you that I don't. I don't know. I think seeing it and wanting to do it means something. Seeing, you know what I mean? I think True. The fact that you saw people playing guitar or heard people playing guitar and you go, you made the conscious choice. I don't know. This is what I think about. And sometimes I go, well, I just grew up being able to do it. But I never, like, in theory, I never, what's the word? I never went after it. Like, I never, like, try. I was just like something. That's why I was kind of good with strings and I, like, could play guitar. I quit playing guitar when I was, like, 16 because I wanted to go skateboard and smoke weed. Like, and then I kind of got back into playing guitar and music a little bit, and then I saw steel guitar or something that interested me, and I was like, oh, I love the sound of that, and I was able to do it because I had all this musical training.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know, like, would I be here had I not been given the gift of musical training at a formative age? Very formative age.
So do you feel like it almost was never a conscious decision for you? It was just something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not complaining. I'm like, oh, yeah, I was cursed with this talent.
No, we all have our ways in, and that just happens to be yours. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever have like another thing that you were like, oh, maybe I want to do that a living instead? Or
yeah, I went to college for painting.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to be an artist.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot
My joke is that there was just so much more money in music that I had to switch back over. But yeah, I went to SCAD for illustration.
That's fantastic.
And dropped out pretty quickly and just kind of like, I don't know, floundered around.
I guess to take a detour here, what was it about that world that infatuated you?
I don't know. When I was probably my elementary school years, I'm guessing, I used to just doodle and draw and I just loved it. And so my parents picked up on that and sent me to art classes and put me in certain things. And I love to do it. I still do it on occasion. I don't know. I just liked drawing and painting and stuff. And I thought that I wanted to do that. It's just when you get to the age where you're graduating high school and after you, like, if you're the best in your art class in high school, it's like, wow, congrats. But like, now you got to make a living. And it's like, I never could connect the dots with like, well, how do you make money from doing this? And I still don't even really know.
I mean, that seems like it'd be probably almost harder than music is making money in art.
Like portraiture? Like is that a career?
I don't even know.
It's hard. I mean, so my life very much parallels that in a great many ways. And I think visual art is very difficult as well because with music, at least, yes, there is service to other things, but often, but you can find a way of creating music that is, you can find a way of creating music that is self-fulfilling, but is also going to bring some money into the bank. I mean, that's hard
that's
to do,
ideal.
But it can happen.
Yeah.
Whereas with visual art, it can be so hard because it can feel like the only way to do this is to be serving something else as opposed to your own sort of creative muse.
Right.
And that I think can really, really fuck with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there is, not to say the music is easier, but it's a little bit easier in that regard. It can be more fulfilling. Whereas making a living as a visual artist and doing it in a way that is creatively fulfilling, I cannot imagine.
The niches must be this big.
Yeah. Super, super lucky.
Especially with all the computer stuff now. Like, AI is ruining music. I mean, think about what it's doing for visual. I can be like, design me a tour poster, and it's like, they can look pretty good.
Yeah.
You ever worry about that shit with like music? Like AI is just going to take over? Really?
No, I don't. Because I hear, There's this. Do you know who Ian James is?
No, I don't think so.
He's this a guy I know from Canada. Met him a long time ago, but we stayed in touch on Instagram a little bit. But AI, or somehow some bot, like stole his identity. This is a big thing. You have to follow up on this afterwards. Some bot like stole his identity and made a record under his name and made a title and made
a 20-track. Heard of this?
It's called.
Really?
She knows what I'm talking about. His name is Ian James, but it's like Ian James, and the song or the album title is something something that's super like, huh? I don't know, he was a Spanish. Ian?
Ian doesn't sound
like that one.
That happened twice.
Oh, really? Well, it's probably going to happen more.
Oh, I'm sure.
But this album's called Street Alone. It's like... Okay. Well, kind of like that might slip right past you, but if you're like, oh, that sounds like something that a computer would be like, yeah, Street and Alone. Yes, that's emotional.
But I feel like, I don't know, like, especially with how like it seems like pop music kind of just gets more and more like dumbed down and simple. Yeah. I feel like we're not that far off, like for like AI just being able to create that shit and like nobody even notices.
Yes.
And then you'll just have this like person that's kind of like the face of it all for the live shows and shit, but everything's just going to be like...
Yeah, I think it will destroy some... I mean, what I was getting at is this, but the music itself that was... I went and listened to this fake album that came out on Spotify.
Was
that
any good?
Well, no, that's what I mean. It's weird, music yeah. was like... It was all instrumental, and it was like... It seemed like I knew that a computer generated, and I could totally tell. Mm-hmm. And when you hear human, there's no mistake, not to sound like a hippie, but you can totally tell when something comes from a human being.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And I think that now. It might, now, yes.
Right okay, now, it could get better. I feel like in like 10 years, like you're not even going to be able to tell the difference. Maybe not, though. Yeah. I hope it doesn't become like that.
Sorry. I was going to say, if there's a computer that can generate, you know, Florida Georgia Line songs, and then that whole world crumbles because the computer can do it, then like, oh no!
True, yeah, that's... Might be a good thing.
I guess I totally agree with you, Brian. I mean, who knows what tomorrow is going to look like in that world, let alone 10 years from now. I do see a world where that kind of music, that kind of big tent pop music, is in some way taken over by AI. I don't think that that's a crazy far-fetched idea.
No.
But I do think, to your point, there is something that you can just smell with that kind of thing. I mean, you can do it now without AI. I mean, you can do it when you watch a movie or you listen to a record and you just know there's too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And you can just say, there's not a creative mind here. There's something else going on.
Yeah.
And then you watch that thing and it has nothing to do with how much you like that particular album or that particular film or that particular whatever. But I do think you can smell it. There is something when you watch something or experience something that is a singular vision that mm-hmm. you immediately know it. And that doesn't even necessarily mean that you love it or that you enjoy it. It's just that you as a person, you I think, can recognize,
yeah, oh,
there's a voice here.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't know. It's hard for me to think that technology could get to a place where that could be up for grabs, but who knows? I mean, that's...
I don't know. I hope it never gets to that point, but...
I don't think it would. I mean...
But artists are fucked.
We've been fucked for a while, dude.
I don't know. Like, if it's a bad time to be someone getting into like graphic design.
Yes, or yes. It's like, horrible time.
But at the same time,
why would you pay someone for that? I think even our logo didn't. We just like ask AI, and they gave us a fucking image.
I don't know. But another thing though is, yes, I think for specific subsets, there are specific skill sets that are going to be going by the ways, or the skill sets are just going to be different, right? If you're a graphic designer, the skill set to thrive in that world is just going to be different now than it was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think there's really never been a better time to be a creative person because you have the ability, even if it doesn't happen in theory, the ability to get whatever it is you're making out to as many people as possible.
That's true.
Has never been greater.
I agree. I always stress that point. And also, you know, you can tell when artwork is hand done. Like when you see a tour poster, there's intricate detail and there's, again, you can kind of recognize the humanity in it. And if it, I don't know, it's,
yeah,
who knows?
And even, I mean, even something silly like this, I mean, just the idea. Because when we started doing this, you were asking earlier what the purpose... I mean, we just want to sit down and talk to people. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is so great about living in the time that we live in, is not only can you sit down and have this conversation, but then you can put it out there for people to maybe yield something from.
Sure.
And we've been super lucky. I mean, we've got so many awesome people in here who... One, I was just surprised as they said yes to doing it. But also, like, had really interesting, thoughtful things to say about committing their life to one degree or another to this weird thing. But the fact that not only can we sit down and have that conversation, but then put it out there for people, I think is just a really great thing.
Yeah, I've been watching them as they come out. It's cool.
Nice. I'm sorry. No,
it's great. It's fun. I like the, you know, I love watching little snippets of podcasts because you get off the cuff conversation with people that you're interested in, or at least, you know, semi-interested in. Yeah, it's cool. Cool idea.
And there's I also think just it helps us out as well that the personality that tends to decide this is what they're going to do with their life is usually a rather eccentric person.
Yeah, yeah. Someone willing to endure all this must be interesting.
Yes. Or at least must have, maybe a few screws loose or something. But what is it about your personality, just your makeup as a person, that you feel like has served you well in doing this particular thing with your life?
Hopelessness. I don't know. That's a good question. I've never really... Well, I have known different. I've worked straight jobs, or I bartended for a long time, worked food and beverage, and I did a little bit of construction. That was not for me. I would say it's for lack of a better idea, but it's not. I enjoy it. I've had the opportunity to go do other things and be other places and make more money, kind of here and there, and it hasn't happened. And so I go, okay, well, I've consciously made this choice to be where I am for 10 years now, over 10 years. So it's like, I know that I want to be here, even though sometimes it feels like, you can want to throw in the towel at any point, but I choose to come back and stay here and enjoy my life. So I kind of know based on my own behavior that I do want to do this. And, I also just don't have a college degree. So
limits your options.
Yeah. So, guitar was just kind of the move. I don't know.
You're mostly a side man. Was that always your goal, or did you ever want to be your own songwriter or artist?
When I was 15, 16, I got into I liked a lot of kinds of music, mainly whatever came to me. Cause back, we had CDs and whatever, LimeWire and stuff. And I got into this is when I was in high school, I graduated in 2004. So this was prime. I was a hormonal teenager when Coldplay and John Mayer and Ben Folds and Jason Mraz, remember that era?
Yeah.
So that was what sort of initially grabbed me in a pop sense. And so I was I can play guitar. Maybe I could be. And I distinctly remember trying to go into my room, trying to write songs. I'm like, can I do this? Mm-hmm. And I'd write a thing and I recorded it in this little tape player thing we had in my basement. And I remember trying to sing it and being okay. And going back and listening to it and hearing my own voice and then being oh no. what? And I could couldn't believe that's what I sounded like. I was like, what? This is what I was just
devastating. It is interesting how much you sound different
in your head. Yeah.
To yourself than when you hear a recording. That's how I felt listening back to these podcasts. I was like, holy shit, voice sounds
like
that.
I'll never watch this.
That really fucked with you. That really messed with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it was we're hearing it back for the first time and realizing that I sounded like that and I didn't sound like any of the singers. It was when you see the clip of the girl going through the magazine and she doesn't look like any of the models and she's crying.
That's
what I felt like.
Dude, that's funny.
What? So you put out an EP last year, right? Was it last year?
It was, might have been
23, 24.
I don't remember. It was just a little batch of instrumentals.
Those are really beautiful. That EP is fantastic. What was the reason for doing that?
I had always, kind of wanted to do that. I don't know. It's a lot of things. I thought the tunes had never been done on steel before. So it was sort of I can justify it. Cause in my mind, a contribution to the musical steel guitar world. I mean, no matter how little. And, it's also a bit of a business card. So it's like, if you want to
can look you up and
you want to hear what I sound like, if I can play in tune or not in tune, here you go. That's what you're going to get. It also, I tried to straddle the line between, there's instrumental music that's look at my chops, and there's also instrumental music that's just for the car.
Yeah.
I like to think that I'm riding the line.
No, it does that incredibly well. I think that this is true, not just of instrumental music. I think this is true. Vocalists do this all the time, but one of the things that we talk about ad nauseum, whether there's cameras in front of us or not, but always serving the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that EP really serves the song. It's really, really well. Like the whole, who's playing on that record?
That's okay. So Sean Giddings is basically the reason that sounds awesome. Sean Giddings is my buddy that I met when I played with Pat Green forever. He's one of my best friends in the whole world. Incredible musician, like one of the best in the world. And I basically would, I was like, I want to do these three tunes. Actually, I think they're like four or five at first. And he was like, cool, done. And he basically arranged it all and had a killer, he's deep into the jazz world in Austin, mm-hmm. and has these great jazz players on tap. It was Daniel DeFore on drums and Sam Pankey on bass. And he basically arranged them and went to a studio and tracked them, mm-hmm. and then sent me basically the whole arrangement minus me. Oh, and okay. I just overdubbed them from my house and just
that's really nice.
Blew
that's
cool. through an entire carton of cigarettes. And then had a product that I wasn't entirely embarrassed of. And perfect. Then, yeah.
What was, for you, what was that selection process like of finding those songs? What the criteria being that they hadn't been arranged for Steel before? Like, because it is a pretty, I mean, it's only three songs, but it's a pretty varied selection
yeah.
on there. How did you come to those
songs?
Are
any of those originals or?
No. So the, because
I know Georgia, I don't know yeah. the other two.
Georgia, we put.
Love is great on that. Love sounds thanks, so man. Good on that.
So Georgia is also, what's his name too? He wrote it, right?
Hoagie wrote that. Hoagie Carmichael wrote that.
Wrote
Ray Charles is like the most famous version. I don't think he wrote it.
No, Hoagie wrote Georgia.
Okay. Oh, really? Yeah, yeah. Actually, that name sounds familiar because when I typed it into Spotify, I remember having to give credit to the original writer. No.
Carmichael is one of the greatest songwriters of all time. I think if you're going to pick, like, who are the five best American songwriters, he is towards the very top. He is phenomenal.
He's up there.
Well, yeah, I just like the changes. It's a beautiful melody. Yeah. And it was Sean's idea to put it in four. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's pretty hip. And
that's then, cool.
that song, Love, is from the Robin Hood soundtrack, like the 76 Robin Hood movie, or 77,
okay,
or 73, I don't remember. I just thought that was a beautiful melody. As I when I was a kid, I watched that movie over and over again. So you know the tune.
Yeah, it's
good. Oh yeah, so you know all those songs. That and then what was it? Oh, Poinciana was a three kings, like a barbershop quartet arrangement from like the 40s or something. That I always thought was really pretty. The changes are just so, I mean, it's a little hokey, but like, I was like, that'd be a cool thing to put on steel guitar because it's kind of sleazy, but sweet and like fun. And so I was like, and they're also from three different pins on the map sonically. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if I could make this sort of cohesive and have a solo sort of in each one of them, Sean and I kind of rotate in each one of those. There's a rotate, like a trade-off and solo thing. And I'm like, well there you go. It's an excuse to do something, get my picture took in a suit. And it's actually served me really well.
What do you think steel does best as an instrument?
Well, there's no frets. So that's kind of puts it in an interesting category because when there's fretless instruments, there's room. In theory, there's room for, well, actually, I don't even know if I can say that. I don't know. I just like it. One of the coolest things that I always bring up is that when you hear, well, this is one of the reasons I picked it up too, is because like when you hear Chris Steele play mandolin, like and he's doing something insanely virtuosic and you have it in your headphones, you can't believe what you're hearing. You can't believe what you're hearing because you don't know what he's playing and you can't believe he's doing it, but you know physically what's happening.
Yeah.
You're watching, there's no doubt in your mind that the pick's hitting the strings and his fingers are doing this.
Yeah.
But when you have steel guitar in your headphones hear it, you're just like, what the like how what? You can't
it's a magic pick,
you,
trick.
Have, you don't
yeah.
know what's going on
and yeah. I, yeah
and it's hard to imagine what's actually happening and I think that's one of the special things about it is that when you hear it you'd recognize the sound instantly you recognize it as superhuman it's like singing it's because there's no it's fretless and it moves all over the place but you don't know what's going on when you hear it
I think that's why it seems so intimidating to a lot of people myself included it's it's seems confusing. How long did it take you until you felt like you were like competent on it? Like
I got one when I was 21 and I was very underwhelmed with my ability at first. I was like, this is hard. So I didn't take it seriously until I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I was a guitar lesson delivery boy, basically, during the week. I would go deliver, like, work for this company that, and
go to people's houses.
Go to people's houses.
Yeah, I did that for a while.
And it was, but I had a lot of free time. And so I was like, well, I'm going to take the steel guitar out of the closet and maybe, like, learn how to play. And I wasn't even playing with finger picks back then. But mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to learn how to play it properly. And I remember, I didn't know anybody that played it. There's nobody in town that played it. I just was, like, looking at, like, the internet, trying to figure out how to do it. So I dig up people teaching tutorials on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Like, here's the solo from this George Strait song.
Yeah.
And someone would take you through it and set the metronome, and I'd go... But I started developing a knack for it to where I was like, oh, I think I sound good. And then it got to the point where I did that for like 6 months and I was just in the room all the time playing it. And it got to the point where I was taking YouTube lessons basically. And I was like, it dawned on me that the guy teaching it, like this guy's a professional. He's in a band and makes money doing this. And I was like, I sound as good, if not better than this guy, I think. Like, I don't want to sound arrogant or whatever, but I'm like, I have a feeling that I could at least stop bartending if I moved to a real place and tried to do this. Uh-huh. I wasn't sure, though. Mm-hmm. But I was like, okay, well, I can move to Nashville and try to get a gig, I guess, and play in bars, or I can move to Austin. And I was like, well, if I go to Nashville and I can't get a gig, I'm stuck in Nashville, and that would suck to be in Nashville, like, and you know, bartender or whatever. But if I'm in Austin and I can't get a gig, at least I'll be in Austin and I can go skateboard and you know, bartend or whatever. But that's why I chose Austin, and then so I played around there a lot. But anyway, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I feel like there are, especially for people who do this with their life, there are those moments, however few and far between, where you make that conscious decision of, okay, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Was that the biggest one for you in music, was deciding to go to Austin, or are there other ones that come to mind immediately?
That was the biggest. That was a serious move. I knew that I wanted to do, I knew that I would end up doing something in music. I chased them. I wanted to be a engineer, a producer for a long time. Because I was like, well, I can know how to record a little bit because I grew up with a tape machine, and like, I can play a lot of instruments, kind of enough to serve a song. Yeah. So I was like, well, naturally, I should be a producer. So I was like, I'll just be a producer. And I didn't realize that it's not quite how, I mean, kind of how it works.
Yeah, it's like anything. You kind of fake it till you make it, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, I wasn't going to be a guitar player because there's guitar players everywhere. They're way better than I am. So I was like, but steel was like one of those things that, I was like, oh, everybody's afraid of this thing. And I didn't know enough at the time to be afraid of it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, that was a big move. I was like, all right, well, I'll pack my crap up and drive my truck down to Texas. And I literally just showed up there, didn't know a soul, and would just walk up to bands after they'd play and be like, hey, I'm new here. I play steel. I noticed you don't have a steel player, so if you want one, here's my number.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, half the guys would be like, yeah. And then someone eventually took a gamble on me and then played one bar, and then all of a sudden someone figures out you can play, then everybody, you know, you start playing everywhere.
Yeah. So your first gigs, like playing professionally, it was on pedal steel?
Well, I played guitar. I mean, I played a little bit. I played in like a bar band in my hometown. Like a little player. I brought the steel out on occasion and would try to like hang with, like, do a little bit, but never supported myself with it until Texas.
Gotcha.
What is it about music that you feel like you, what is it about music that is most fulfilling to you as a person? As someone who does work primarily as a sideman, one would think that you get something out of this more than just the paycheck, if this is what you're putting your life towards. Mm-hmm. What is that for you?
There's something also I think a lot about at this point. a lot of it is the paycheck and comfortability and, like, you know, being able to, you know, hack through the world with a guitar is cool. But I one of the things I like giving it to people, because people think when they hear the sound, and it's so, like, it's like I realize that for a lot of people it's a treat, and it's a sound that they identify with and they love, and they don't know how to articulate how much they love it. But every once in a while, someone will come up to you afterward and be like, I just love what you, that sound, man, sound of that steel guitar, dude. I seen you set that thing up and I heard you play. I was like, man, I love to be able to give it to people. When I, like, or I even had rehearsal, I'll set it up and I'll start warming up and tuning it. And then when someone goes, oh man, like that gives me a little something.
Nice.
I like that.
Yeah. I feel like everyone loves a little steel.
Yeah.
You know,
people do. It's like this. And people also love to tell you that they love it because I think they, it's true. They don't, they're not around it much, but nobody, it's not a very popular, it's getting more popular, but it's, you know, it's not the most popular instrument, but it's very recognizable, and people do love it, and they probably don't talk about it with their friends, with their other...
Yeah, I think it's been, like, it's interesting, too. It's, like, the one instrument I can think of, it's kind of been secluded to this genre of country music, and you don't really hear it much outside of country ever, so I think a lot of people, unless you grew up on country music, you're just not used to hearing it.
Yeah. It's also just incredibly recognizable sound as well.
Yes.
Like to what you were saying, that it's very difficult to hear a steel and confuse it with something else. I mean, obviously, other than something like a lap steel or something. I mean, that sound is so distinct. You know, you can hear a harmonica and you can think it's an accordion. I mean, depending on the context, there are moments like that in music where you can second guess yourself, but with a steel it doesn't sound like anything else.
It's true. Yeah, I agree. It's got a very particular thing, and I mean, going back, I don't know that it'll ever be replaced by, I've seen like MIDI programs that try to emulate steel guitar, and they do kind of a decent job for this, but you can't really do what it does.
Totally.
With computers, or even with the guitar, you can kind of fake it with guitar.
How do you feel your brain interfaces differently between playing as a guitar player and playing as a steel player? Are those coming from the same place, or are those two drastically different approaches that you take as a person?
I think they're completely different. I as a guitar player, because I stopped chops. I stopped ingesting language on the guitar at the age of 16 when I gave up in the basement, you know? But when I'm sitting behind a guitar and someone like asks me to do something, I kind of panic a little bit because my dialect is so like rudimentary. Mm-hmm. So like if we're in a country gig, I've heard him play on a country gig, and I'm sure you do the same thing, where like if it's like solo, you'd probably have this bag of tricks you pull from.
Yeah.
That sound all, you'd probably be comfortable taking a few passes, trying different things. Whereas if someone handed me a guitar and was like, do a solo, go, I'd be like, oh shit, like all I have is Stevie Ray Vaughan licks from like, this is going to be really embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like I do like to finger pick, I like playing the acoustic guitar, I do a lot of recording that way, like just nice right hand stuff. Mm-hmm. When it comes to like just the bona fide chops and being proud of your instrument, my guitar playing is I feel like I'm on a fourth grade level, and it becomes very apparent the second someone asks me to take a solo or something.
Yeah.
But with steel, I ingest so much and I regurgitate so much, and I'm constantly absorbing and execute and whatever. It's kind of my life. So like I'm just more proud of it, I guess, or I have more of a vocabulary.
Is just larger.
Yeah. So definitely different neural pathways. Like I have you think in terms of like pockets and ideas and
That's one thing that I'm curious about, because we've had some other steel players on it, and I think it's very fascinating that a lot of guitar players transition to steel, because they're so drastically different. Such drastically different instruments. Like they're really the mental picture of each instrument is so different that they both have strings on them, but I almost imagine starting off as a guitar player kind of hinders you when picking up a steel, because you have to rewire your brain in a lot of ways. Did you feel like when you started playing steel, you had to do that, or could you build off of what you already had with guitar?
I wouldn't say that knowing anything about guitar would help you play pedal steel guitar. It's particularly ergonomically, there's almost no... Guitars, frets, and maybe right hand a little bit. I play use finger picks. You ever play with finger picks on?
I am dog shit with fingers. I do a lot of finger picking.
I do the fake nails.
Horrible. Oh, yeah.
That's kind of like finger picks. That's similar. Yeah.
But the difference between that is the finger picks go on the front. So like,
does anyone use those for guitar? Or
people use them a lot.
Oh yeah,
I am. What are they made so out bad of?
Like metal.
Metal. I'd be curious to try some out.
But. You will feel like you're trying to walk down a set of stairs with roller skates on for the first couple hours.
I've tried a thumb pick before, and I cannot fucking get used to the thumb pick. It feels so
weird.
How long
did you try?
A good while, actually.
Really?
Couple weeks, but a couple weeks of doing it every day. But I could not get used to it. It just feels so weird having it feels like walking down stairs with roller skates on, you know. It's like
you're like, I'm usually really good at this.
It's like I got to be able to feel the string and
once it is a nice feeling, because when I play if you give me like a acoustic guitar and I have finger picks on. If you can just learn to lighten your touch and just barely touch the strings and kind of like, once your hands recalibrate, you just tone stuff that you can pull out of a guitar. That's a ton of fun because you don't really have to do much work because it's all the tone is super crispy and you can just barely touch it. Your right hand's just kind of like barely doing any work and you're getting this beautiful bell tone out of every single string. I mean, your thumbs and fingers are nice too, but
yeah. It's also just a very different tone. I mean, I do a lot of finger picking on guitar, but it's also just a very different tone that you're pulling out of the instrument when you're using your fingers over a pick or over finger picks. I mean,
100%.
It's just in the interaction, the play is very, very different.
excuse me.
Obviously you work in the country world a lot because that's, like Brian was saying, that's kind of where steel sits in music. Outside of that kind of music, what are other styles of music that you really like that you don't feel like you maybe get to play as much?
You mean for my own?
Yeah, just as a listener. What other genres of music that you like?
I don't know if it's necessarily by genre, but I get obsessed with records. Like if I hear enough people, my contemporary people talking about an album or something, if I hear it from three different sources, I go, okay, I'm buying it. And I go on iTunes and I buy it and I put it on my phone.
Oh, damn. Old school.
Yeah, dude. I don't pay for Spotify. My goal is to make more money from Spotify than I ever give them. I made a couple pennies. Actually, I don't even think I've made any pennies from, but I haven't given them a single one either.
That's
so
good. That's
so you're
good.
Yeah, you're there. You're in the green.
I buy it and I usually put it on if I clean my house or when I go to the gym, I'll stick it in my ears and I'll usually give it a good two or three passes all the way through and then kind of either keep milking it or do away with it.
That's kind of how I am too. When I'm listening to music, I'll have a couple albums that I'm into and I'll listen to those, just those albums for a while.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it that way. I feel like in this day and age, it's way too easy to just have access to too much music. Mm-hmm. So you never really fully digest what you hear. You hear one thing on a surface level and then onto the next thing. And then
sitting with something is really valuable.
Yeah. I think hearing something a bunch of times and really, when you listen to something for the 100th time, you start to pick up all these nuances you haven't heard before. And I feel like it's easy to not get that stuff with the amount of options we have available today.
Yes. I think, if you listen to something over and over again, people have talked about this before, but you listen to a record and initially track two is your favorite, but if you listen to it over and over again and you're track two starts to sound oh yeah, I like that one, but track eight's sticking out to me now because it's I really like this one moment. And then you kind of, you fully excavate everything in there. And then eventually you guys ever heard of The Colonel?
No,
I don't think so.
He's from Jackson, Tennessee. He's probably one of the best guys that you've never heard of. It's amazing. He has this record. He's got a few records out, but his last one's called Listen to the Blood. And it's
is this from a little while ago, right?
It came out probably three, 4 years ago.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
He's incredible. And he's like that. At first listen, you'd hear it and it's not, it doesn't sonically stand out as some like wild, like, oh, what is this? But like, it's yeah. kind of, but if you listen with headphones, you listen to what he's saying, and then some of the music starts to, I mean, it's like, it's extremely dense poetry over this kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's, but I have listened to, I have probably put more hours. I've listened to that record start to finish hundreds of times, and I still get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I feel like that is always the best stuff, is the yeah. stuff that isn't immediately great to you. And yep. then you, but for yeah. some reason, you kind of just want to hear it again and yep. then again and again. And then all of a sudden, you know, it kind of starts to grow more and more on you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think any good art, it takes a while to yeah. really understand what's going on. Not on like a, not on a technical level musically, but just to be able to process and digest what it is that you're taking in. Mm-hmm. It can, the good stuff can take a while.
Yeah, for sure.
Steel players or otherwise, who are some of your favorite musicians?
Ooh, like
biggest influences.
Steel wise or
just in general? Both.
I mean, it was steel players or just
I feel like they're different worlds. Like steel, I don't know that I would, just as far as like musicianship goes. Well, my buddy Sean Giddings is a constant inspiration to me. He's the guy that did the keys on that record. He plays with like Eric Johnson and, I mean, he's played with some of the best in the world. You know, Blake Mills is, I'm sure you get him.
Yeah. He's awesome.
He's just got an incredible,
I'm a big
everything.
Fan of him.
Yeah. I'm to the point where I love his playing and his brain so much that even if what I hear I don't like, I'm like, well, I'm gonna like this eventually.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like it right now, but let me give it a few more because it's him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't know. As far as non-steel players, I'd have to. That's. I mean, I don't know. I like anything well done. Anything with a little bit of vulnerability, but certainty at the same time, is really nice. But steel players. Living or dead?
I'm going to go with dead first.
Dead ones? John Huey. Buddy Emmons is obviously like the guy. I mean, dang, I don't know. Dickie Overby is probably one of like the... He's a Texas... Actually, I don't know if he's... He's been some time in Nashville, but he's some time in Texas too. Does Dickie Overby ring a bell?
No.
No, he's one of like any steel player, ask him about Dickie Overby and everybody will tell you about him. He's great. I'm trying to think of guys that you might, who are the steel players that you know, just out of curiosity?
Not a lot, to be honest.
Give me the name. Name the steel players that are.
Honestly, yeah. I think the only person I could name is Buddy Emmons.
Buddy Emmons? Paul Franklin, does it ring a bell? Really?
To be honest, I never really like got super into listening to country music until I like moved here. That now I like.
You know, have to.
Yeah. But prior to moving here, which was not that long ago, I never really got into country.
How do you feel like in a band setting? Steel, in my mind, takes up a lot of sonic space. Different instruments, obviously. Do that differently.
Mm-hmm.
In a band setting, how do you feel guitar, electric guitar, and steel interplay? Because that can, at least in my mind, that can be a very difficult circle to square. Because
getting them to coexist,
and that can oftentimes be messy. When you're on stage with an electric guitar player, mm-hmm. how do you find, like, speaking of Buddy, like when Buddy's playing with like Leon. There's no mess there. It sounds everything takes up the space that it's supposed to take up.
Well, tradition. Yeah.
How do you approach that?
Well, if you're playing with a country band, like a true country band, that you there's like manners. You know, there's like okay, well, if the steel takes the intro, that means the guitar's got the first verse, and so you're. I mean, in theory,
see, these are all the little things I can hear that is happening. I don't quite totally know the
rules.
Yeah.
Well, give us the rules then.
I'm not going to write all this down in my head.
Well, like, you know, it's not, I don't think there's any hard, fast rules all the time, but like if there's a steel intro, that means during the verse, like typically someone else would take it. So the steel player is supposed to sit cross-armed during the first verse while the guitar player does the fills or the keyboard player does the fills. Mm-hmm. And then when it's time for the thing, you know, everybody kind of looks around and everybody takes turns. It's supposed to be sort of organized in that way. And, you know, there's good guitar-many stuff. Sometimes the guitars and the mm-hmm. steel do stuff together in harmony or doubled or whatever. But, yeah, I try not to clutter it up. I've been in trouble for cluttering, for jamming up the... the gig sometimes for just getting a little too, like if there's a nice shuffle, I'm just like, yeah, screw you.
It's hard to have that restraint.
Yeah, it really is.
I find that's my biggest issue is cluttering stuff up.
Yeah.
You don't really realize it until like, you know, four bars of playing too much that you're like, oh shit, I should probably stop for a second.
And I think that's where steel can be hard because steel clutters up quicker. Just the actual sonic space the instrument takes up, it can get messier quicker than a guitar mm-hmm. can. A guitar player can recognize that, make some corrections, and yeah, maybe those weren't your best four bars, but mm-hmm. you weren't ruining the song. Whereas steel, you got to be really on top of that.
Yeah, it's also easier to do if you're recording. Then you can kind of. If you get the whole song in front of you, you can seek and destroy, and hopefully mm-hmm. there's a producer or someone being like, okay. Come into this verse here and, you know, help the guitar player out of the verse and double his line, and then you can kind of build it that way. But in a live setting, if there's five guys on stage or girls or whatever, you can kind of, there's a little bit of looking around and you don't want to step. And then sometimes the guitar player and the steel player will come in at the same time, and then you go, oh, no, you go. And then it's, no, you go. And then it's like you both sit there and kind of, I mean, I don't know. I don't do that much work like that much. It's fun to do, but I don't. Out of all the traditional players here, I don't get the local traditional work is I'm pretty I would imagine I'm far down on the list because there's a lot of guys that really want to do that and that's mm-hmm. all they want to do, and so they can have it. I'm okay.
Yeah. Was there any moment or particular gig for you where you're like, oh, I can like, you know, because you said you bounced around between a lot of like odd jobs, like bartending and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Do you have a particular moment where you're like, oh, I can actually like do this for a living now and do all that other stuff?
When I got on board with Pat Green, I played with Sean Giddings, that guy I was telling you about. He had solo stuff and he was also a side guy. We met on a gig in 2016 or 17 and we just became instant buddies. I played on his stuff and we do gigs together. I go play in his band. And then one day a guitar player acoustic and electric player left Pat Green's band and they were looking to hire a new guy. And Sean was like, do you want to come audition? Do you play electric guitar? And I was like, yeah, I totally love playing electric guitar. And, I went and auditioned and kind of learned enough. I mean, I was fine on it. I didn't mm-hmm. do great, but, anyway, I just went and auditioned and like, that was the first like legitimate. Instead of just packing up my crap, going from bar to bar, making $120 at a time, it was the first time where I'd like gave someone my account and routing information, and I'd get on a bus and go here for the weekend, and then like on Thursday night, this paycheck would hit my account, and I was like, oh my god, this is unbelievable. I just go to the grocery store being like, yeah, I'll take organic blueberries, thank you. So that was nice. Kind of having a regular steady thing. And then during the week when we're not playing, I can go play at the bar as well. So I was kind of like, it was nice. That was the moment where I was kind of like, oh, this is doable. But, you know, over time, surely you get comfortable with it and you're like, kind of like, I want a little more money. Or like, how come they get paid more than I do? Or mm-hmm. you go, yeah. Or I don't know if I want to play this kind of music anymore. Or, you know, you naturally want, you can't help but want more.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. That's human nature.
Yeah. Because when I moved out of North Carolina, I was like, all I want to do is just, if I can just never have to bartend or use a mop again, I'll be happy. And then you go, and surely I get like six gigs in Austin, and I'm like, I'm doing it. I quit my job. And then you go, oh shit, is this forever? Am I going to be driving around in my truck from bar to bar till I'm 50?
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, okay. And then you get a better gig that's one gig, and then you go, oh, this is great. And then you have them, is this forever again? You know, and I think that's just kind of...
The cycle continues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of all the people that you have played for, is there one in particular that sticks out as the most fun? Who do you love being on stage playing with? Because I think that's a big part of being a musician is that interplay that you have with your fellow
musical
musicians.
Chemistry?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like, that's a good question. I think it's fun. The guy that I'm, in Ella's band that I'm playing with, his name is Ben Flanders. He's this incredible, like, fusion jazz metal guy. Okay. Kind of like a guitar player that I never get to play with.
Yeah.
But he's playing in the country world. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't have any, like, hard and fast rules about what I'm supposed to do or not supposed to do. He just has all of these, and I'm just, like, guitarmonizing with him, and kind of, like, the show is pretty, like, it's almost like, it's very, the songs are, like, on the record are kind of country and poppy mm-hmm. and fun, but the show is, like,
yeah,
you know, it's fast-paced and loud and in your face, and there's, like, all these, like, highly orchestrated moments where there's, like, I don't know, it's kind of epic, and so I get to kind of, like, pick his guitar playing and harmonize with him here, and it's kind of fun to, like, because I know what he's going to do, and I know what the harmony is coming up, and I'll do it, and I'll see, basically, the whole gig is me seeing if I can get him to turn around and go,
yeah.
You know, so if I can get a nice look out of him, I know I'm doing, like, you mm-hmm. know, so that's kind of fun, that's been fun the last month or so.
But also, that's one you're doing right now?
Yeah.
Nice. Who else are you playing with right now?
I also play with Luke Grimes.
Yeah,
he's like, very cool.
Yellowstone guy. He doesn't have a super busy schedule because he's an actor. So he's sort of like, his calendar is always like a surprise. We always got to navigate. Mm-hmm. But it's been, again, a blast. And those guys are fun to play with too. They're all incredible, super tasteful, laying low musicians. I call them all idling Ferraris on stage. They're all capable of doing so much, but we're all just kind of sitting back and just making sure it happens, which has been a blast.
That's nice. The best kind of music, right?
Yeah, it's fun to play and fun to have the restraint and fun to just kind of, like, you know, be the support for Luke and make his songs, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no pressure to, like, perform and get up and, you know what I mean? It's not, I don't know, just a different ballpark. But, Another thing about it, as far as musical chemistry goes, it's kind of fun to play with it. I like playing with a singer-songwriter, just a singular well, guy with a guitar, girl with a guitar, that has nice songs. And if the changes are fun, and it's just, I get to just creep around and be a little cloud mm-hmm. underneath them and sort of let them do their thing, and that's fun.
Yeah.
To do. When you're dealing with that kind of dynamic where there's sort of like a band leader at play, what do you think are the best attributes to being a band leader? What are the things that you, the commonalities, the threads that you see with being not just a good performer, mm-hmm. but someone who can lead a band?
Something like a band typically makes the best out of everybody. Like, they kind of play to everybody's strengths. So mm-hmm. like, being a steel player is weird though, because a lot of times the band leader doesn't really, they don't know how to tell me what to do because mm-hmm. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Like, do steel things.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to work for these guys who would find me all types of work and put me on little one-offs and stuff. And I'd be in rehearsal rooms where these guys would be like, just absolutely like, just putting the drummer under a microscope, being like, could you try the ride for a half a second here? And the drummer's just like pouring sweat, like, yeah, that's a good idea. And I'm like, do you have any do you want me to do anything? Oh, you're doing fine. You just keep doing you. And I'm like, okay. And I think that's just how it is, because a lot of people don't. Yeah. They just hear the noise, and as long as it's in tune, they're like, sounds great.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like steel is one of those instruments where it's they just have that thing that they do, and people want to hear that thing.
Yeah,
so just show up, do that thing, and people are like, yep, that's the thing.
I think if you're good enough, they don't say anything to you, and if you're bad enough, they just fire you. There's no in between. It's sort of binary. They're like, you got one or you don't.
That's not a bad world to be in.
Yeah. But I'd say that a good band leader would just make sure, I mean, it's letting someone have fun, letting someone do their thing. And if there's mm-hmm. a little bit of like, hey, do this with me, or don't play here, or at the top of this song, do a little something. But just kind of, I wouldn't say hands off, but letting people be themselves mm-hmm. and with maybe light guidance here and there. I don't mind a little bit of someone telling me, do this with me, or don't do this here, or lay out here, or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Just that kind of general direction.
Yeah.
What, kind of bringing it back to what you were saying at the beginning of this, what is your, at this point in life, What is your goal with music? What's the thing that you want to get out of this in the long run?
Well, a mortgage would be nice. You mean like, is this like a, where are you going to be in 10 years kind of thing?
Yeah. What's the end game? Yeah. Is it just to serve what you're doing now, or are there other places you want to get to with music?
I think I'm always trying to get better at steel guitar, because you can never be good enough. So there's that. I'd like to be on the road, but not, you know, doing 150 dates is a little exhausting. So it'd be nice, ideally, if I was 50 and doing 40 shows a year on the road with a band that I wanted to play with, and then recording on Music Row and making good money, mm-hmm. like through the system, and then cherry picking music that I actually like want to make, the music that I believe in.
Yeah.
If I could have a healthy balance of like that trifecta, and you know, still have a home and support a family or something, that I think that would be ideal.
Nice. Do you ever do studio work?
Oh yeah. Oh, nice. Well, I mean, I've done a couple sessions on Music Row, technically, like in those little studios down there, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I'm not like in the world of.
Yeah, that's session. Kind of its own sort of circuit.
Its own, and the guys that have those positions are likely guarding it with gnashing their teeth about
it. That seems like it would be a hard world to break into.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I hope I'm. From what I gather, it's sort of like a wait in line kind of thing. I think mm-hmm. eventually, like there's certain guys I've noticed that sort of, there's about five or six steel players that I see when records come out with contemporary artists. There's one of five steel players on there, and I can name you all five of them. Mm-hmm. That I'm like, and there doesn't seem to be much. It's not that they're all like incredibly super talented in an objective chops way.
Yeah.
They're just either appropriate or, I mean, incredibly good, but there's also like, there's just a lucky bunch of guys. And I'm not saying, I'm not to discredit them, but they're a group of guys that the producers know they can do the job. So they keep calling them back. And I think what happens is if one of those guys slips up or, you know, moves away, then they go to the next name on the list and then someone else gets a shot. Mm-hmm. And if that guy does well, then he's the new A-call. And I think it's this weird thing where you kind of got to circle the fence and look for a crack. And then if you can get in there, you can. But I wouldn't count on that. I mean, I would love to do it. I think I would. I don't know. I don't know what it's like to go to clock in at 10 a.m. and do three union sessions and then go home at 6 with your, and having, you know what I mean? Like, like assembly line music.
Yeah, that's got to be.
But the money is like, I mean, I don't, I'd love to see how long I would last. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that's nearly $1,500 a day, from what I understand. So if you can make $1,500 a day, 5 days a week, I'd deal with a lot for that.
You and me both.
You know? But you might tear your hair out. So right now I have a couple of producers I work for that here and there where they'll be producing something and they'll go, this needs steel. I got this guy that I send, and they send me an MP3 over drop. Sometimes they just text it to me. I fly it into my computer. And I do a pass on it, and I ship it back to them, and then they go, "Cool, thanks," and they Venmo me money. And if I have enough of those guys, I can make $500 a day in my underwear, which would be ideal. And half the time,
that's the dream.
Right there, that's the dream. It's awesome. Yeah. On my good months, where I have a lot of overdubs, it's really. I used to hate it because I beat myself up real bad about like being perfect and in tune, and I can sit overdub used to take me 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I used to get so mad at myself, but now I just kind of like, all right, stop. Just have a good attitude, sit down there and take it piece by piece. Mm-hmm. And I make sure I do a good job. And every time I send it, I usually get it. They're like, oh my God, this is really good. Well, I gotta get you and play on more. I'm like, yeah, please. So yeah, that would be, I mean, if I could just have a overdub pile this high in my inbox, and just when I'm on my days off, just kind of start hammering them out and be inspired by them, and I could go live anywhere, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
That's ideal. That to me, that sounds better than like touring all the time and stuff. Do you ever, because, you know, touring and playing all over the country, there's a lot of travel and shit involved with that. Do you not mind that? Or, because for
like
me,
it.
I hate going to the airport and fucking.
I know what you mean. I think I like it. You kind of have to make the best of it, mm-hmm. but I'm good at making the best of it. I like hanging out, going on road trips with people I kind of know and then becoming friends with them and joking and, you know, playing music, and it's fun. I mean, yeah, it does get to be an ass beating if you like carrying around a 75 pound guitar mm-hmm, and the load ins and load outs and the airport layovers, and like that can be, but it's like, part of me is like, oh, I was like, I'm cut out for this because most everybody I know doesn't like it. But if there's like hotels and catering and mm-hmm. like treats and like whatever, like there's like the better the accommodations, the more I like it, and the more I just like doing it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're getting paid for your time and you come home after the weekend and all you did was hang out, have a good time, play a few shows, and then you get money going in your account. It's like, well,
to
complain
to
about
a
that is like, yeah. I could, but it's like, I would never, for the record, I love it. But yeah, I could sit there. I mean, if you want to bitch about, you know, travel or like having 6 hours between sound check and show and just like, you know, that can get kind of insane. But
yeah, they're like anything. There are pros and cons with music. And
for sure.
Music certainly has its cons, but.
I also just think about how many people, how badly I wanted to do this 15 years ago. Like, oh, one day I'll be a professional musician. I want to play on tour.
I really think like anything in life, so much of it is just your outlook on it. And if you can just enjoy the fact that, no, I get to do this, that goes a really long way.
It does. But, and I'm thrilled to be. To do it, every once in a while, I do look down and go, "Oh, what have I done? How did I get here? Oh no!" But you know, it's intermittent. It doesn't happen too often.
Yeah,
I
got to say, I'm super happy that we made this happen. This was killer. We've been trying to get this to happen for a little while, so I'm stoked that this happened.
Oh, dude,
this was a ton of fun.
Yeah,
this was a ton of fun. It's always.
I'm bummed we couldn't get you to play a couple songs.
Yeah, it'll happen. It'll happen eventually.
I'll come back. I'll do round two, man.
Another time. Yeah, okay. We'll start having repeats on here eventually.
Yeah, we run out of people to get on. No.
Once people start shooting us down, we'll call.
We'll definitely have some repeats, and this will have to happen.
I have a feeling getting musicians to come on and talk about themselves for an hour is probably. You're not going to run out. There's no shortage.
So far, it's been
so
pretty
far,
easy.
Hey, you want to go online and talk about yourself for everybody? Oh, me? Yeah, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Little old me. No, but seriously, thank you for doing this.
Yeah,
this
of course,
this
man.
Ball.
Thanks for having me.
Cool.
Sweet.
That was great, man.
Yeah,
that was killer.
That was a good time.
Thank you for doing that. Seriously.
Yeah.
I know that's...
Of course.
I know it's always a pain in the butt to like just throw something like this in the schedule. So that was killer. That was a ton of fun.
I got my nap in, dude.
Hell yeah. I love it. I love it.